It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. How is everybody doing tonight, gentlemen?
Doing great.
Doing pretty well. What about you guys?
Look, I got my microphone is dongling right. Look at that.
Congrats. It's only taken 55 episodes.
Coast trash, man. Didn't we discuss this right before we started?
Coast trash time. Anywho, all right, let's jump right into this. So the thing that I've been waiting to talk about all week, the thing that makes me so, so happy, Google announced the Pixel 2 last week, and lo and behold, they removed the headphone jack. Oh, it's such a sweet day. After seeing so many things on Twitter last year about how Apple was terrible. Oh, Apple's the worst. Oh, the audacity of Apple for removing the headphone jack. And you knew when they did it, right? You knew all of those things that were criticizing Apple. It's like, well, this isn't going to age very well. You know that the other phone makers are going to follow suit. And what do we have a year later? Google removes it. So our favorite guy, Nilay Patel over at The Verge, originally a year ago, he published an article that said, Apple is user hostile for removing the headphone jack. Huzzah, this is terrible. So people started rightfully needling him on Twitter repeatedly till he wrote a follow-up story. And he's like, well, they were still wrong and Google's wrong for doing it. And basically his argument is this. You're going to take something that was a standard for all these years. Now you've extended it and made it proprietary. And now this is the future where we're all going to have these competing standards for something that used to be standardized. Well, the bad news is that ship sailed when we had proprietary platforms, I do believe.
So on the Pixel, is the proprietary plug that we're talking about on the Pixel actually a USB-C plug on the Pixel, or do they have a proprietary?
Nope, it's USB-C. But I think what he's really talking about, he was really talking more about the Google's, what do they call them, the Pixel Pods, terrible name, the Pixel Pods, which are their equivalent of AirPods. And their whole gimmick is that you can have translation in your ear. So if someone talks, you're able to have it translated. I mean, yeah, that's kind of nice, but they are sort of tethered ear pods. So they're not completely wireless like AirPods, because of course they're not.
Right. So we had briefly had this discussion earlier when I was referencing USB-C and Lightning. And so I kind of think, I mean, if you're going to remove the headphone jack, like Google did. I actually agree more with Google here because at least the plug that they have on their phone is a general standard that more than one company actually uses. Whereas Apple with the Lightning port, they're the only ones that use it. You don't even get a cable in the box with your MacBook or in the box with your phone that actually allows you to hook your phone to your MacBook, which I don't have much reason to do that. I'm just saying it just doesn't make as much. It makes more sense to me to remove the headphone jack if you've got a USB-C port on there than in Apple's case where they have the proprietary plug. And so where I can kind of see what he's saying, I also had no problem at all upgrading to my Bluetooth Sonys and a pair of AirPods and saying goodbye to the cords. And you know, that's not really my gripe with this. It's that if Apple's going to remove the plug, it would be better if they had a standard port there instead of their port. Make sense?
So it does, except the only problem is Lightning came out in 2012 and USB-C's spec wasn't even finalized until like the fall of 2014.
Right. Lightning has been used for so many things better than what was available on the market. And at this point, it's been out for 5 years. So trying to get Apple to switch to a USB-C with so much market penetration in Lightning is kind of difficult at this point.
What's the saturation of USB-C on small devices yet, though? Because I still see micro USB everywhere. So I feel like it's going to be a couple of years before USB-C sort of becomes the standard.
And Brian, you know, our mutual Android friend is going to give us a hard time maybe 2, 3, 4 years down the road if Apple switches to USB-C. He'll say, but we were first.
Yeah, like that matters. Oh, look, they just invented USB-C. I could just hear him now.
What sort of weather event are they going to name it from? Is it going to be Lightning 4 or something? Or
call it Hurricane or something. No, you know, the funny thing here is I get where he's coming from, Nilay Patel is coming from, because, you know, hey, we had this common thing and now it's sort of fragmented. So regardless of the type of connector that you're using, no one's using the same thing, but you still have Bluetooth, right? Bluetooth's a common component in all of these. Of course, his argument is, well, Bluetooth sucks. Well, the best way to get a technology to improve is everyone has to really go all in on it. If you start weaning people away from wired earbuds, you have to make things better. And that's what we've kind of seen, right? Google's doing their own sort of proprietary thing with the Pixel Pods to make them, you know, have the translation capabilities. Apple does their own proprietary thing with a W1 chip. And all of these devices still function as normal Bluetooth headphones if you're on a competing platform. You just don't get all of the bells and whistles. And I don't think that that's an unreasonable expectation. A company should be able to do what they want to do with technology they designed to work on their platform. They didn't have to make these things interoperable at all. They could have gone completely proprietary, both of them. But they're still interoperable, and you still, and I know this is a joke, but you still have dongles. If you really need wired headphones, I'm sure you can get a 3.5 millimeter to USB-C or a 3.5 millimeter to Lightning, but they don't want you to use it, neither company. I think that's going to be the standard going forward. That's just me.
So speaking of dongles real quick, did you guys see today that Amazon released their new dongle that's Lightning to 3.5 and still has another Lightning coming off of it?
I did, and it was sort of like the Belkin. Belkin announced a new Rockstar that has like dual Lightning ports and a 3.5 headphone jack, which I think is kind of ridiculous, but whatever, to each their own. But yeah, Amazon's is sleeker, thinner, and $5 cheaper.
Also, back to your point about the integration, though. So one of the things that Nilay Patel's article talks about is, you know, to get the most out of the W1, you have to have an iPhone. And to get the most out of the new Android, you have to have Android N or Nougat. And Nougat's been out for 2 months now and only has right at a 17% adoption rate, whereas iOS 11 has been out for 2 weeks now and already has a 30% adoption rate.
No, Nougat's been out for a year. It's been out for a long time. I think you're thinking of Oreo or whatever the other one is.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it was August of 2016, not 2017. So, yeah.
I was just going to throw out earlier that you are correct. That is the worst name, Pixel Pods. Every time you say it, just like, it's just stupid.
It's like that old, was that Bill Cosby drawing show, Picture Page?
Open up your picture pages.
Picture pages. Pages, time to get your picture page.
Strangely, that's not what Bill Cosby is going to be remembered for.
It'll be Jell-O Pudding Pops. That's what he'll be remembered for.
I agree with you, Brad.
I don't know. It was just a funny article. It feels like that, you know, he made an argument a year ago and he had to be very adamant and double down on it. And I can see where he's coming from. Hey, openness is great. Openness is fine. You still have openness, though. You can take Pixel Pods and use them on an iPhone and they're normal Bluetooth headphones. I can take AirPods and use them on a Pixel. They're normal Bluetooth headphones. They won't do everything that they can do, but that's not really the fault of the competing platform. It's not their problem to solve.
So I'm going to segue this a little bit into a little bit of the conversation we had earlier today. So I bought a Nintendo Switch this week. It was a complete impulse buy. I had to cancel a trip this weekend. I was mad about it. I had a little bit extra money from the trip. And so I saw the one I wanted, which was the neon one, in stock when I was in Mississippi. So I went and bought it. It's the first device that I've bought besides my MacBook that charges via USB-C. So that's kind of convenient because I already have all the plugs. But my 29 watt one, I usually have a USB-C to Lightning in it so I could charge my iPad Pro. So I've got to swap out those cables. That's kind of a pain. The other thing that's kind of odd with the Switch is it doesn't support Bluetooth headphones. So you have to hook wired headphones into it, or you have to put in like a dongle that's a transmitter for your Bluetooth headphones. The little Joy-Cons that come with it are Bluetooth. That's how they work with the device when you unhook it. But the device itself doesn't support Bluetooth headphones. It boggles the mind. So now I've had to throw a cable, the container with my Sony noise canceling headphones that I use on the plane, so I can actually play my Switch on the plane and not bug my neighbor to hear what I'm doing there. So that's kind of annoying. I thought that was so weird. It supports Bluetooth because that's how the joysticks work, but it doesn't support Bluetooth headphones. Thank you, Nintendo. Otherwise, it's a pretty neat little device.
I think we can all agree they're the evil company in this. Between this and not making enough of the NES classics last year and the Super Nintendo classic this year, they're pretty evil.
Yeah, but they make some really good games.
They do, but I mean, I guess if you're hooking the Switch up to a TV, it's something, but I don't see myself playing a portable system all that much. It's all I can do to play my iPhone and iPad games when I can remember to do it, so, eh.
I'm just getting into Zelda on there, and it's pretty amazing. It's been so long that I've played a game like that.
It's a beautiful game, too.
It's really a sharp learning curve for this old guy to get back into a Zelda type game, because it's been a long time, but it is a lot of fun, and it's just kind of like mindless, you know, lay in the bed and play Zelda for a little while, play myself to sleep kind of thing. And for airplanes and airports is really why I bought it. I got that and Mario Kart. It's the only two games I got so far.
No one could fault you for getting Mario Kart.
So Jim's sitting in the airport, you know, doing this.
Yeah, you're gonna be like the guy in the commercial that they first did the Switch, where the dude's got it set up on the seat back in front of him, and everyone's gathered around on the plane and watching him play it.
Please take your seats. Please take your seats.
The guy at Best Buy even said, "Don't buy the steering wheel joystick thing. That it's kind of crap. That you've probably played Mario Kart your whole life on a joystick, and that's how you probably still want to play it." And I'm like, okay, good point.
So did you guys check out the? I put a link in the show notes for the roundup of the HomePod versus Google Home Max versus the Sonos One. Tell me you guys took a look at that and have some opinions on it.
Yeah, I've definitely got some opinions on it. You know, in my house, I had a bunch of Alexa Echo Dots. I had a couple of Sonos Play Ones, and none of them did exactly what I wanted them to, right? So for me, out of the new ones that have come out, right, the HomePod and Siri that's coming out later this year, it's at a higher price point than what I'm looking to spend for my current setup, right? So the HomePod is probably going to have beautiful sound, but I have great home theater and great stereo systems in multiple rooms throughout the house. So any room that I put a HomePod in, it's not going to be the best sounding device or the best option for audio there. So at $349, just to kind of have the ability to say, "Hey Siri," you know, have it. It's funny, I said, "Hey Siri," and now my iPhone's lit up. But hush, Siri. All right.
We use "Hey Lady" on this podcast.
Nice. Okay. I'll have to remember that next time. So for me, the Google Home Max and Google Assistant, right? I have no investment in anything in the Google ecosystem. I mean, I'm sure it could control my Hue lights and Lutron switches and whatnot. I've got an old Boston Acoustics bookshelf speaker that looks almost identical to this. And that bookshelf speaker, I think I bought at Circuit City in like 2005, right? So there's just kind of no styling cue in the Google Home Max, and it's even more expensive than the HomePod. So for me, kind of one of the new front runners is the Sonos One and Alexa. They're claiming that it's going to have Siri support by 2018, which I'm hoping it's early in 2018, because they said that they were going to have Alexa support in 2017. And it just came out here in October. So I'm hoping that we're not looking at a October release for integration with AirPlay 2 and Siri. But at the $199 price point versus the $99 new Alexa price point, or the Echo at this point that's $99, I think I'm going to get $100 better sound and probably better microphones in the Sonos One, that Alexa will be able to hear my commands better.
So you're going to go all in on the Sonos then?
I'm probably going to go two or three Sonos. And again, right, it's still not going to be the best sounding option for any of the areas that I'm in. But, you know, if I want to listen to an audiobook while I'm cooking breakfast or something like that, right, I don't need that piping through 7.2.1, you know, Dolby Atmos and all that, right? It's going to sound just fine coming off of a Sonos speaker.
So I read the article, and the one thing that struck me about it is they really don't know a lot about these things yet. It's like they're like, it's going to sound like this, or this is the hardware and this is kind of what it does. We think this is what it'll do. But nobody's really like had one of these things in their house yet. I don't think any of the three of them, nobody's had any of them like at home yet. Like, I kind of found the article, it's like, hey, we're going to compare these three things. And then I look at it and they're like, no, really, you're just going to kind of tell me about it, you know, something that I could probably get out of the marketing material and, you know, spit it back in my face. And then eventually we're going to get to find out about them. As late as a year ago, I was really wanting to go Sonos. I really did. And the one thing that turned me off from that was something that Jason's mentioned to us before is, you know, you've got to use their remote to control everything. You know, you've got to use their player to do everything. It doesn't support AirPlay now. I thought that was kind of annoying. I didn't go Sonos. I ended up buying an Echo Dot and just hooking a nice pair of studio monitors into it. And I've really loved it, even though it doesn't support AirPlay either. I kind of went around that because I went back to Spotify, playing more Spotify than I do Apple Music. And now I'm kind of doing a half and half, trying to decide what I really want to do this Christmas, because I like the idea of the Apple speaker. I mean, the specs sound great. You know, the 7-8-inch subwoofer with 7 tweeters, all individually amplified. I mean, it's going to sound really good, and I think it would sound great in my apartment with one or two of them, because I would probably, if I bought one, if I liked it enough, you know, a week later or whatever, I would probably end up with a second one and replace my soundbar subwoofer in my apartment with just two of those speakers as a left and right. So that's kind of where I'm leaning now. The Sonos is intriguing, and I think I would be more interested in it if like Jason said, if everything worked now. Like if, you know, if they could say, hey, we support AirPlay 2 now and we do all this stuff now, if it, you know, out of the box, if it did that stuff, I would consider the Sonos. But right now I'm still leaning Apple, and I'm still really enjoying my cheap little Echo Dot plugged into some Mackie reference monitors. I mean, it sounds great here. I live in, you know, 900 square feet in a loft. So with, you know, those two things, I can't turn it up near as loud as it'll even go. You know, I'll have neighbors banging on my door. So, you know, it is what it is as far as that goes.
I think it's pretty much a given. I'm going to go HomePod. I think that's what I'm going to give a shot to, just because I don't know. I'm rooting for the home team on that one. I will say, on a tangent, I did order a Google Home Mini this week, not because I really want one, but because it was like $50, and I'm like, I've seen what Amazon's you know, the Echo Dots can do. I want to see how that assistant works, and for $50, it's kind of a lark, so I'll do it. And that should get here about mid-October, I think.
Your hobby's cheaper than mine. The Switch with a couple of games cost me like $400. So,
so as far as release dates go, I know the Sonos One is end of October. The Google Home Max, when is that coming out? Do you know?
I thought that was roughly on the same time frame, though I could be wrong on that.
And then HomePod is December time frame?
To be determined.
What about you, Mr. Brad? Do you think you'll replace any speakers in your house? Or do you have a receiver now with bigger home speakers, right? Isn't that your setup, if I remember?
No, I had that set up a few years ago, and now I'm just down to, I have a Philips soundbar and with a Philips sub, and it's all wired, you know, over whatever the Toslink or whatever it's called. You know, it's an optical link. So obviously it's doing all kind of like all of the digital, you know, sound processing to give you sort of that 7.0 or 5.1 type surround sound. I have a Echo in the kitchen, and it gets used a good bit between me and the kids. You know, we'll tell it, add this to the shopping list, or set a timer, or I need an alarm, or play the music, or whatever. Between the three of us, it gets a lot of use. I'm not totally sold on either Alexa or Siri as far as, you know, which one would be better. I know Brian has a good point about he thinks there will be further, more capability down the road. I mean, I do see that there could be more capability with Siri down the road, purely because it has a larger saturation across watchOS, iOS, tvOS, et cetera, whereas with the Echo, you just have it on the Echo and the Echo devices, whether it's the one with the screen or just, you know, the Dot or whatever. So it's hard for me to really say, you know, I'm not really sold wholly on one or the other.
I think since I have a deeper investment in Apple's ecosystem, it makes more sense to go more in on the HomePod than it does the others. But I'm trying these digital assistants just because I want to see how they function and how good they are or aren't. Alexa's okay, but I'm just not that impressed with it, honestly.
I guess I was listening to either Marketplace Tech or Make Me Smart, and Molly Wood was saying something about she asked her Google Home to do one thing, and her Echo just kind of took a dump whenever she asked it the same thing. And I was thinking, well, you know, that's totally because the Google product has Google behind it. I mean, they have 15 years or so of data backing up theirs, whereas Amazon's has only been around a couple of years, and it certainly doesn't have the saturation that Google does. And I don't mean with Google's speaker products, I just mean, you know, Google is just ubiquitous across all platforms, across every age group in everybody's lives, and somebody is giving them some data, whether they think about it or know it or care or whatever, they just do.
I feel like Siri is not as good as the Amazon lady or probably Google's assistant. I haven't used that one before. But just from what I've read, it seems like you can do more with the other two than you can Apple.
So what's been your actual experience, though?
My actual experience is my Dot is a little bit better than... Well, it's definitely better in that the Dot always picks up. It's always listening, and it picks up so much easier and so much quicker. A lot of times with Siri, I have to say it two or three times before she picks up. Whereas with my Alexa, it's always spot on. Like, even... Like, it's probably about to go off now because I just said it. I mean, it's always... there, you know, I mean, it just the things you can, I mean, the volume controls and, you know, the news flash and the way you can set all that up. There's no, with the Echo, there's, even though the app sucks on the phone, I think that the Amazon Alexa app sucks. There is an app and you can go in and configure things like these are the six things I want you to play when I say news flash, or these are my favorite sports teams when I ask about things, or all this kind of stuff. You can't customize Siri in any way at all like you can Alexa. And so that to me is a, even though it's poorly implemented by Amazon, it's implemented, it's there. And so that to me is a little bit better. I think the Apple HomePod is probably going to have the nicest sound of the three, although Sonos is probably going to be close. I think Sonos is going to be, what, $199? Did I remember that right?
I don't think the sound quality... So after having had Sonos Play 1s for a year and then looking at the specs of the HomePod, I think the HomePod's going to absolutely crush it in sound.
Oh, right? Okay.
I really don't think it's going to be a close comparison, but you're also talking a device that costs $150 more, which is essentially 75% of the cost of additional of a Sonos One. I'll say this, you know, I kind of echo Jim's sentiments a little. I sold my four Echo Dots a week or so ago, knowing that new Echo devices and Sonos and HomePods were coming out. So for the last week, I've been in an Alexa-free home. And so talking to Hey Lady on my Apple Watch or iPhone has been a little bit different in that I have to make kind of a concerted effort to either raise my wrist to my mouth to call out for Siri to do her thing. It's just not quite as natural as it was to just, you know, walk through the house and say, turn on foyer, turn on garage, turn on dining room.
Turn on wife.
Right. I have found that using just an iPhone or just an Apple Watch is not nearly as convenient as actually having a device that's sitting there listening the whole time.
I'll also throw something else in there, too. I mean, yeah, you make a good point, Jim, about the customization, but also I think you've had some bad experiences with Siri, and once you did, you just never went back.
You're right.
Because a lot of the times I'll ask, hey, did you know you can do this? And you're like, no, I had no idea. I think if you gave it a fair shake, I think you would see it's a lot more capable than you think it is. Like being able to ask it what the score was on your watch. You get the logos pop up of the teams and you get things like when I was asking about the Ole Miss Alabama game, it said Ole Miss was subjugated by Alabama last night and it gave the score. Like it has little flourishes of humor that it puts in there.
Did it have like a pig squealing like in the background when it gave the score?
It totally should have. But yeah, you know, I think it is actually more capable than you probably give it credit for. Because, I mean, for me, it's weird that you say that it doesn't listen, because all of my devices, that's the one thing that I find a little bit off-putting is if I invoke Siri, I get a cacophony of devices all trying to take control and say, you know, hey, it hears it. I'm actually thinking of disabling it on the iPad and just leave it on the phone maybe exclusively, because that's where I probably use it the most. Maybe the watch. Sometimes that's annoying when you're in the car and you're trying to get CarPlay to take the reins and your watch answers for you if you're tilted at just the right angle. But yeah, it's definitely much more capable than you give it credit for. And I think, because if you're using it for news flashes and Spotify, I mean, it's not like you're using the Echo really to its utmost potential either.
No, I've done a couple other things lately. Jeopardy, you can tell it to play Jeopardy.
If you want to feel real smart, you can wait to the end of the week and play Teen Jeopardy against it.
Ooh, nice. What was the other one that I did? There was like a Thursday night football sports quiz. I did that one. And I always ask it the weather. Like, I fly to St. Louis tomorrow, so I'll say, you know, what's the weather in St. Louis this week? And it'll tell me the whole week.
You know, Siri will absolutely do that.
Yeah, I know.
I had to teach my wife this the other day. My wife asked me, what's the weather going to be like in Kentucky where we're going? And I'm like, I literally do the same thing and watch it do the thing. It's like, how do you not know this?
Did you say like, hey, let me Siri that for you?
I really should have.
Now you say, oh, I forgot that my minor in college was meteorology. Let me look.
Well, we got a storm front moving in out of the northeast. The temperatures are going to be way down. But we look over here, coming up on the three-day forecast.
You missed your call in for drive time, Brian.
Oh, I totally did. If there was only more money in it, I would have totally gone for that. Yeah, I think you should probably give it a try. There was a site called HeySiri.io that was out for a while, and I think the guy who ran that shut it down, but it had a list of things that he had compiled of, if you ask Siri this, it'll tell you this. And it had a list of things, even I, who tries to use it a lot, was completely unaware of this. I think he put the final listing as like a PDF that you could download for a while after he closed the site down. Apple doesn't want you to have something like that because they want it to be natural language when you talk to it. That's the thing that I dislike about the Amazon device, is that you have to be very syntactically correct when you speak to it, because if you're not, it will misunderstand you. You can change a word or two and it has no idea what you're saying, whereas the same is not true with Siri. I find the natural language processing in Siri to actually be a little bit better. And I've used this example many times of where I would tell the Amazon device to turn off all the lights and it goes, I don't have a group called all the lights. And I can tell Siri to turn off all the lights and it goes, okay, and then it proceeds to turn off all of my lights. Little things like that. But weather, sports, all those things are built in. And on the Apple TV, it actually works really, really well, I find.
I can talk to Alexa with a mouthful of gummy bears, and she still understands me.
That's just sad.
And she won't yell at you like Brian.
Right.
Well, you see, we're recording this here audio, and we really want it to sound like... There's your trouble right there. You got a gummy bear stuck in your throat.
All right. Well, moving right along. So let's see what else is going on this week. Oh, there was a neat little announcement I saw today that HBO has announced an iOS-based TV show called Mosaic. And it's going to have a branching narrative and multiple endings. It's directed by Steven Soderbergh. And it's kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure. So you as the viewer can make decisions and shape the outcome of certain events in this show. And it's going to be released as a standalone app. And then in January, Soderbergh's version is going to air. And you can compare his choices to your choices. So, and it's going to have like Sharon Stone. And it's going to have Garrett Hedlund, who was in Deadwood. It's going to have Beau Bridges. It's going to have lots of folks in it. Kind of a neat little experiment, I think, to have something of that scale as an app.
So basically, they're going to record multiple episodes or episodic content, and then if you choose happy, sad, or whatever, it's going to go this direction. Well, what happens if you want to rewatch and you choose a different one? Is it just going to show you that alternate episodic content?
It should allow you to remix it until your heart's content, I would suppose. I mean, it wasn't really clear, but it seemed that way.
It sounds like the Encyclopedia Brown for adults.
No, it's Choose Your Own Adventure, dude. Encyclopedia Brown was a linear adventure.
Yeah, and Choose Your Own Adventure. And I think it sounds stupid. Like, I want to lay on the couch and watch, like, Longmire and just let the crap happen, right? Their job is to write the damn story and show me a TV show. It's not my job to make it up as I'm watching. Really? Ugh.
No. I love this idea. I think this is a great idea because I watch shows. My wife and I will watch a show, like we're watching Fear the Walking Dead right now. It's been pretty good this season. I mean, it does have some slow spots, but it... You know, when they hit the high points, I really enjoy it. You know, we'll discuss it or like, what did you think about that? Whenever something happens, you know, or one of us gets to go up and pee or whatever in the middle of episode, we're like, well, oh my God, you know, we'll talk about it for 2 or 3 minutes. And sometimes I think to myself, it'd be really cool if they, you know, and I would spit out like an alternate thing that they could do. So this is right up my alley for that kind of stuff.
So to Jim's points, I feel the exact same way when I see people eat fajitas in a Mexican restaurant. And the reason I feel that way, in addition to making your clothes smell awful when they bring out the sizzling things, what other meal inside of a Mexican restaurant do you get where you have to assemble it yourself, right? You go, you order it. Why doesn't it come to your table pre-made? Why do they give you all the ingredients and the tortillas and force you to do it yourself? So I can kind of see Jim's I want to be entertained passively type of stance on this. I totally get it. And you can wait till January and watch it as it was intended by the director. But I think it's kind of neat that you can make choices, narrative choices, and change the outcome of the story. I think it's kind of cool.
I'll give you, it's unique. People can watch it how they want to watch. You know, they can do it now or they can just watch it how they, you know, if the show is good, you know, I would definitely watch it once it was just released, you know, with whatever endings the director chose or whatever. So, I mean, I like good TV as much as the next guy. So I'll watch it, but I don't want to have to sit there and go, you know, pick door A or B, or, you know, should he cheat on his wife or not? You know, what the hell?
You get door number 3. You're going to jail.
Hopefully it won't be presented in quite that cheesy of a manner, but
Just like, let's make a deal, you know, drama hour.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I like those video games. You know, if you'll remember Knights of the Old Republic on the PC, you know, you could, based on your decisions, you would lean Sith or lean Jedi, depending, you know, as you made your way through the game. And as you turned more Sith, like, your face became more disheveled and your eyes would become gray or whatever. Or, like, on the Telltale Games where it'll just tell you and it says, like, you know, you make a decision, it says, you know, Jordy, you will remember this later.
Yeah, the comparison to the Telltale games are pretty apt, which are great games, by the way. I know we've talked about those before. So, let's see. Uber this week. It came to light that Uber was removing an Apple-granted API that could have let it record a user's iPhone screen. Holy cow, how scary is this? So, Uber had the ability to watch any user's iPhone screen, and apparently they were granted this access. It was done in support of the Apple Watch app. I guess there was an issue with map rendering. And this is one of these, it was the only non-Apple app to have this ability. So given Uber's lack of discretion and ethics and other aspects of the way they've conducted business, this is kind of horrifying. We don't have any indication that it was misused, but wow. What was Apple thinking, giving a third-party company access at that level? Was that an oversight, do you think? I mean, how did this happen?
I don't think it was an oversight at all, right? I think they saw at the release of the Apple Watch, Uber as very much a strategic launch partner. That was a big piece of the keynote, was showing, you know, how quick you could hail an Uber and actually have one show up at the Moscone Center or whatever. So I think, and also at the time, not all the negative stuff had come out about the fact that Uber was tracking people after they got out of the car and selling location data to the paparazzi, you know, stars as they got dropped off at restaurants or whatnot. So I think it was more of a, we're going to allow you to do this in good faith, thinking that they were more of a stand-up company than what it appears that they've turned into.
Yeah, they did this before we all knew Uber was such scumbags. You know, I think now that we know what kind of company it is, or, you know, the philosophy of how things did run on the inside, I don't know that they would do the same thing. I primarily use Lyft now just because it makes me feel better as a person.
I just figured you'd use whichever one was cheaper.
Aren't they comparably priced?
They generally are. In Dallas, Lyft, the cars are usually nicer. Supposedly, Lyft has a little more difficult process for you to become a driver. You've got to do a little more drive along, a little different stuff. Most of the people I ride with that are Lyft drivers in Dallas, they also do Uber. They do both, which is perfectly allowed. Not all Uber drivers are Lyft drivers, but it seems like most Lyft drivers are also Uber drivers.
I will say that I have an app that gives me a dollar back on each ride that I take, and I think I cashed into some Verizon rewards points that gave me 20% off all of my rides on Uber for a while. So I do notice that Uber seems to do partnerships a little more frequently. So getting a dollar back for every ride that I do, and being able to massively discount the rides within a month. I don't know if I can still do that. I don't know if that's still, you know, something I can cash in my points for with Verizon, but I wish Lyft had a lot more of those types of integrations and partnerships. It would be nice. I did notice that Lyft does do business profiles now, which is convenient for me since I like to do that when I travel instead of renting a car whenever I can. So I'm sort of resolved to try that, I guess, at some point, but, you know, we'll see. They're a new company now, but oh my goodness, this really... It's like, why does this horrible information keep coming out? Could this please stop? Could there be nothing else scary that I have to learn about Uber? Please, please, please.
Do we think Uber's going to get any better now that they have a new CEO?
It's not for lack of trying. I heard the former CEO was still able to name two new board members or something, it looked like, against everyone's wishes, or at least not notifying the rest of the board. There was something about that came out a couple of weeks ago. So I don't think they're probably going to get any better until the former CEO is completely gone.
It seems like most of their scumminess came from him.
There was a nice write-up from Marco Arment on why there are no Apple Watch podcast apps. Did you guys get a chance to check that out?
I mean, he was already talking about, you know, having to redesign the Overcast app possibly for the new Apple Watch with cellular, and then having to redesign Overcast for the new Notch. So I can see why he might do a write-up like this purely from a design standpoint, you know, and he would be an sort of an inside player on how these things work.
It does really surprise me, though, that Apple doesn't have a native podcast app for the Apple Watch from the standpoint of they've done that in the past, right? They've done a do as I say, not as I do. So I'm surprised that they don't have something that allows them to use the private APIs that they're not going to expose to developers yet in order for them to provide that functionality that people come to kind of expect out of this product.
Playing audio is playing audio. You figure that they wouldn't intentionally neglect it. It just seems silly, especially for folks like us who listen to a lot of podcasts. I would probably use the functionality of the watch a lot more if I could do that.
Yeah, it seems like the only difference between playing audio, like music, and playing podcasts would be the forward and rewind become forward 15, back 15, or whatever your flavor is versus next track, previous track.
I've certainly got addicted to double tapping my right ear for next track, man. You're just walking along and something's playing and you're like, next song. You just double tap that right ear, them AirPods, and you just keep on going. That's nice.
A true badass will configure them so that one AirPod does one thing and the other AirPod does another. So next track is my left ear and play pause is my right ear.
I actually have Siri as my left ear and next track is my right ear.
So you have the thing that you admittedly never use as one of your options.
I've been trying. I don't use it on my Mac. I've been trying on the phone to be better. And it does work better with music. That's the thing, is it does work better now with music. And so that's getting me to use it because I can say, you know, play something by Journey or, you know, whatever, and it'll play it. It recognizes that kind of thing now.
Siri's the good-looking girlfriend that treats you bad.
She's the expensive girlfriend that treats you bad.
That's true. I like the ability to just stop what I'm listening to because people will come up and talk to me, and sometimes I don't want to take out my AirPods, and sometimes I do want to go to a next track. So I had both of them as Siri for the longest time because I would use that to initiate phone calls or to add things to my calendar or, you know, all the other things that you can do that you're not doing with it.
I haven't sunk in on any AirPods yet, so I still use my Aftershocks. And so on the right side, behind the ear, there's the volume up, volume down, and power. And on the right side is a play pause button, so you know, if I'm grocery shopping or whatever and I go to pull into the thing to check out the checkout line, you know, I always put it on pause just so I know the girl's going to say, do you have your Kroger number? Or hello, how are you? I don't want to be the rude ass that just kind of ignores whoever.
No, I hear you. Let's see, what else do we got? Apple did launch a new consumer-friendly privacy site that explains a lot of their policies and their rationales. I really do appreciate that. I really do appreciate that they are a company that values that type of thing. I gave away my wife's iPhone 6S to a family member who's a little bit on the paranoid side, and I was having to explain the concept of the secure enclave, and you can actually store your fingerprint on it. It's actually okay. It never leaves the device. It doesn't go up to the cloud. Having something like that is kind of a reassuring thing that you can point them to. I mean, it's hard to convince someone who's paranoid that you can trust some of these services, but I think it's been demonstrated pretty well that Apple does.
If you use Touch ID, they're going to come after you for 9/11.
There was a sketch on SNL last year. I'll send you guys a link and I'll put it in the show notes where it was, don't store the fingerprint on your phone. That's how they get you. That's right. That's exactly how they get you. It was the one where Tom Hanks was a redneck, and he
that was the best. Yeah, it was. Yeah, Steve or whatever his name is. That was a great episode. I remember that.
That was pretty funny. Well, speaking of privacy and security, right? My dad was happy they came to visit this past weekend. He got my hand-me-down iPad Air 2, so he's never had an iPad that had Touch ID on it. And then on his account, I went ahead and enabled two-factor auth just as a, you know, secondary step because he doesn't use a very strong password. He just thought it was the coolest thing when I was, you know, had wiped the iPad clean, logged in with him, and it, you know, popped up on his iPhone SE a map of where we were, and it said, you know, somebody at this location is trying to log into your iPad Air 2. And he just thought that was the neatest thing. So it's pretty cool for, you know, seeing the parents who were not technology savvy for many years just absolutely love and depend on their iOS devices every day.
My dad inherited my 12.9-inch iPad the other day, and I got a call where it was being prompted to turn on two-factor auth. And do I need to turn that on? I was like, yeah, okay, let's do it. So I don't know if it's going to come back and bite me, but they went ahead and did it. That's at least nice. They'll learn something. Well, I think that's all I had for this week. What about you, gentlemen? Do you have anything else?
I've got a really good story from back in Mississippi that I want to share. So I went to Mississippi last week. My grandmother is not well, so I went down there for the week to visit and spend some time with her. And while I was there, my brother ran into an issue with one of his boys. It's his stepson. He's got three boys. An 11-year-old is the stepson. Then two that are his are 9 and 13. I think I got that right. Maybe 10 and 13, something like that. So anyway, the 11-year-old has an iPhone that he uses. And he got in trouble at school for something. And it was something with his, it wasn't with his phone, but they wanted to look at his phone for something with the trouble. And so they came across a contact on the phone. And Brian, you're probably going to have to break out the bleeper for this. But he had named a contact on his phone, fucking piece of shit, like name the contact that. And they asked him why he did it. And he clammed up. And the other two said, it's so he could ask Siri to call fucking piece of shit, and it would call this friend of his. So he's a super smart, I mean, super smart 11-year-old. And so he named a contact on his phone so he could tell Siri to call that, and it would call this friend of his at school. I thought it was pretty ingenious because I did the same thing with my lights here when I named my lights here at my house. And I'd tell, you know, Siri, turn on the bleeping lights, and Siri would say, the bleeping lights are on. And I thought that was really funny. And for him to, you know, I mean, it's my toilet sense of 10-year-old humor that I found funny. And so he did the same thing. And so I just thought that was a hilarious story with Siri. It kind of ties into the episode a little bit. Christopher really loves using his Siri, showing it off to friends. And so he was showing that ability off with nickname. So you can nickname your contacts, anything you want. So there you go.
Yeah, mine says wife for my wife instead of her name. So I just say, hey, lady, call wife. And then it does it.
Well, it's funny. When Siri very first came out, you have to kind of tell it your contact association. So I said, you know, hey, lady, I am Jason. And Stella is my mom. Patrick is my dad. Kate is my wife. And then I was going through my contact list and I said, Andrew is an asshole. And it came back and said, Jason, that's not very nice.
Yeah, we'll do stuff like that when you curse at it. I've noticed that as well. It gets on to you a little bit. So
I don't know if you'll be able to bleep all that in or not, but you know, you can bleep it. But I just thought it was a really funny story with an 11-year-old and Siri and just how you know, how they're using these things and having a little bit of fun with them. So
good deal. Well, that should do it for this week, folks. Until next time, have a good week, and later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.